Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hello, everybody. Hey, it's me, Tanner, from Cozy Cryptid. I'm your host, and thank you for joining me today. This episode, we're going to talk about some of the creatures in Tolkien lore. So I hope you enjoyed the episode, and have a great day. Here we go. Ready for all you Tolkien fans out there, are you guys ready for this episode? Hope you enjoy it and share it with your friends and family members. First up, we got the Ainur, also known as the Holy Ones. They were being encompassed both the Valar and the Maiar. They were the first and mightiest beings created by Eru Ilúvatar long before the beginning of the world. They were primordial spirits who existed with Ilúvatar, and with him created the world through the music of the Ainur. After the creation of Arnor, many of the Ainur descended into it to guide and order its growth. Of these were 15 more powerful than the rest. 14 of these great Ainur became known as the Valar, or Powers of Arda. The 15th Melkor turned aside from the path and became the first Dark Lord. The many lesser Ainur that occupy the Valar and Ardor are known as Maiar. The Ainur were the offspring of Iltor's thought, and each were given understanding only of that part of the mind of Iltor from which he or she came. The exception of this was Melkor, a brother and spirit to Manwë, who later became the Lord of the Valar, and he was given some of the parts from which the others had come. But for all his gifts, he did not know the full mind of Eru. Melkor and Manwë were the most powerful of the Ainur. Ainur were kindled with a flame and perishable, which can be taken to mean that they were granted free will by the Creator. Eltor instructed them in the arts of music until he brought them together to make the music of Ainur. Great song that created the vision of Ilúvatar and ultimately the great world, the real world. In the beginning of the music, the Ainur were all in harmony, and Eru and one another, but Melkor turned aside to his own pride, seeking power for himself and attempting successfully to bring discord to the great music. He later led many of the Ainur astray. Through the music of Ainur, Ilúvatar created a vision of the world. He showed it to the Ainur and explained much of its nature and destiny to them. Ainur, therefore, have much knowledge of the world, but are not themselves omniscient. Ilúvatar then granted the world true being by declaring Ea, causing these visions to come into being. Melkor and many of the others, mighty Ainur, desired to send into it and form it in readiness for coming of the children of Ilúvatar. That is, elves and men. Upon descending into the world, the Ainur became known as the Valar and the Maiar. Those Ainur were entered the world and chose to live in it at its beginning and remain bound to it until its end. Melkor was eventually thrown into the void by others. He is prophesied to return for the end in the Doggerath, the final battle. Little is known of the ultimate future of the Ainur, even by themselves, but it is said that after the great battle of the end of the world, there will be a second, even greater music and with the children of Iltor. Among many Ainur who entered the world long ago, there was one of the order of the Ainur named Melian. Alone of all the Ainur, she would have one of the children of Iltor, King Ulu, Thingol of Doriath, and wove the girdle of Melian that protected Doriath for many centuries. Through her, an essence of the Ainur entered the bloodlines of the elves and men, passed down through generations after generation, and was still present at the time of the War of the Ring. Arad was Melian's great-great-grandson, and Aragorn, too, was her descendant, though through many more generations than Elrond. Ainyorn is a kingon, word originating from Beleriand and means holy ones. It appears to come from the word Ainyorn, meaning holy, although the origin of the second element, is less clear. It is possible there is a link between the word Ainyorn and the word Eru, and the first element, means one, though this not be true as there is no further elaboration on this. There's pretty interesting. So the Ainur were basically like the angels and stuff. So the Valor. Or Vala were the powers of Arda, who shaped and ruled the world, and they live in the Western continent. So the Lords of Valor. These are names of the Valor, as they were known as the Elder in Middle-earth. They were known by other names of Sindarin origin. For example, they called Varda Elbereth. Men knew them by other names, and sometimes worshipped them as gods. The elves called Varda the creator of the stars, Elatari, the dwarves called Elu the creator of Mala, the ants called Yavanna the creator, Kamatari. It is to be noted that, without exception of Orin, the names listed below are not actual names but rather titles. The true names of the Valar are nowhere recorded. Male Valar are called Lords of the Valar, females are called Ladies of the Valor, or Valyr. Among these exist six married couples, with only Ulma and Nina remaining single. Mawi Sulma, the King of the Winds, and the King of the Valar, and husband of Varda. Melkor, the first Dark Lord, was the strongest Balthal, before he was banished from the group. Ulma, the Sea King and the Lord of Water. Alui, the smith, and the lord of the earth, and all that's underneath, and the husband of Yavanna. Orin Haladron, the huntsman, the lord of the forest, and the great rider, and the husband of Vena. Nemo, the doomsman, and the judge of the dead, and husband of Beri. Ermo, the lord and master of dreams, visions, and desires, and creator of the Orli Mali, or path of dreams, and the husband of Esti. Tokas Alstadado, the wrestler, champion of Valinor, and last of the Valar to come to Harda, and the husband of Nyssa. Varda Alatari, the Star Queen, and the Queen of the Valar, and the wife of Maui. I'm sorry if I'm saying these names wrong. By the way. Okay, Yavanna, or Havana, whatever. The Fruit Giver, and the Lady of the Earth, and the wife of Oli. Niana, the Weeper, and the Lady of Mercy. Este, the gentle lady of healing and rest, and the wife of Ermo. Vari, the weaver, and the wife of Mendos. Avena, the ever young, and the wife of Arome. Nessa, the dancer, and the wife of Tokos. The Haratar, or High Ones of Arda, were the eight greatest of the Valor. Maui, Varda, Oma, Yavanna, Alui, Mandos, Nina, and Orime. Melkor, the most powerful of all, if not count among them. Lori and Mandos were brothers, and we referred to each other as Venatori, or Masters of Spirits. In early versions of the Legendarium, gods was a word used often to refer to them, and Valor and Valerie is a short term doing it, male and female Valor. Like the other Anyor, the power of the Valor were ambiguously mysterious. The Valor had similar and superior abilities to the Maiar, because as they trolling light and the fire, transforming into many forms, or trancing men and elves with their presence. Manwi and Olmo controlled the winds and waters of Arda, respectively. Yanaba and Nessa created the two trees, Larian and Napurian, to illuminate much of Armin. Arda would rely stars and constellations that prophesied the doom of Morgoth. The Valar together had the powers to raise the vast island of Numenor up to the surface of the sea. Cool. Then we got the Maiar. The Maiar were primarily spirits created to help the Valar first shape the world. There were numerous, though not many were named. Their chiefs were Inoue, Banner Bearer, and Herald of Manwë and Ilmari, the handmaid of Varda. Five of these spirits in the third age became the incarnated wizards. Each of the Maiar were associated with one or more particular Bala and was of similar stock, though less powerful. For example, Ose and Unen, U-I-N-E-N, as spirits of the sea, belong to Olmo, the sea king, while Kormo, known in Middle Earth as Saruman, belonged to Elu the smith. Others included Mara, originally also of Oli, known in Middle Earth as Sauron. Adawi, known in Middle Earth as Radagast. Radagast the Wise. What was it? Belonged to Yavanna, the fruit giver. Arwen, known by elves as Murthurdin, became to Middle Earth as Gandalf. Olrin, who belonged to Manwë, the Wind King, and Varda, the Star Queen. Gaudas ways took him often to the house of Ninya, the weaver. From her, he learned pity and patience, which perhaps aided him in his struggles to unite the free peoples of Middle Earth against the power of Sauron. So Sauron is a Maiar. Sauron, Gandalf, and Sauron. The Saruman, they're all Maiar. Okay, which perhaps aided them. Okay, Altar and Palindome, they're known as the Blue Wizards, travel to the east, never returning to the west. Their fate is unknown. The Balrogs were corrupted. Maiar, who became Melkor's most trusted and terrible servants. Melian, both Vanna and Este. The sun and moon were also appointed by Maiar Aaron, a spirit of fire, uncorrupted by Melkor. Was chosen for her radiant beauty and fiery devotion to the workings of Valar. Was selected to guide the sun. When a Valtillian, a hunter, in the company of Orimin, was chosen to steer the moon. Cool. mayor, like Balor, did not rate themselves in a fixed form, but could freely change shape. Orlin or Gandalf walked among these people of Middle-earth in an uncertain form for many years before being sent on the errand of the Valar as one of the Istari. Like the Valar, however, this power could be lost when abused. Following the dark trails blazed by Melkor, Sauron took upon the form of and remained the Dark Lord in the Second Age. And yet, Maiar retained their immorality. From all indications, when the physical body of Maiar is destroyed, their spirit wanders houseless and their power diminished until they may take physical form once more, or are restored by their respective Balor. As elements can be seen in the threat of Lúthien to Sauron upon his defeat at the Tower of Werewolves, whereby it is said, "Ere Sauron's spirit left its dark house, Lúthien came to him and said that he should be stripped of his raiment of flesh, and his ghost sent quaking back to Morgoth. And she said, 'There's everlasting thy naked self shall endure the torment of his scorn, pierced by his eyes, unless thou shalt yield to make the mastery of thy tower.'" A further example includes the resurrection of Gandalf after he and the Balrog of Moria were both slain, one by the other, on the mountain peak of Zirgazigil. "Naked, I was sent back for a brief time until my task is done, and naked I lay upon the mountaintop. There I lay staring upward while stars wheeled over, and each day was as long as a life age of the earth." It is not clear how or what restored Gandalf, though it can be inferred that Manwë played some role. It was Manwë that sent the Istari on their errands to check the power of Sauron in Middle-earth. Therefore, by Gandalf declaring that he was sent back until his task is done, indicates some level of Manwë's embalmment, or as argued by some, it was a direct intervention of Eru Ilúvatar that brought Gandalf's return. Like most of the Ainur, the abilities and powers of the Manwë remain unknown and presumably diverse, given the nature of the Manwë was to aid the Valar in shaping the world. They likely have considerable power to augment the worlds among them. A Manwë, as a primordial spirit beings, are functionally immortal and essentially immune to the ravage of time. Even from physical destruction, they remain in spirit form. Beings of divine origin, they can shapeshift if they so choose. They wander the world unseen or shape themselves in any fashion, be they elves or other creatures called Fëanor and Cúchulainn, could be destroyed, but their being not extinguished. It is suggested that the Maiar, in their service to the Valar in shaping the world, presumably could manipulate the elements and energies like the Valar counterparts. They were able to see given a physical body again over time or with help from the Valar. Presumably, the Maiar possessed the ability to perform magic, thus performing blessings, spells, curses, exorcism, etc. Given the vastness of the universe and the ability of the Maiar to occupy such points, they are capable of teleporting vast distances by taking the form of a flying creature like vampires, birds, bats, etc. The Ainur could fly. Interesting. So they mentioned something called the Illuminari. If I can find it. Astari. Wizards are still known as the Astari or Harren Astarion. Order of Wizards were five Maiar spirits sent to Middle-earth while embodied as old men to aid the free peoples against the threat of Sauron. In the underlying lands around TA-1000, Manwë, leader of Ainur and King of the Valar and Arda, learned that the Dark Lord Morgoth's most loyal lieutenant, Sauron, was returning to power. He then summoned a council, which concluded that the Valar were to send three messengers to Middle-earth to protect the free peoples and reassure them that the Valar had not forgotten them. Only two Magyar came, Kurumo, a lair named Saruman, sent by Alui, and Alatar, sent by Oromi, Maui, summoned by Olorin, a lair named Gandalf. Asking if he would go as a third messenger, Olorin claimed that he was too weak and that he feared Sauron. However, Maui said that it was all the more reason to go, and he commanded him to go, whereupon Barda said, "Not as a third, Yavanna," asked Kurumo. "Take Alvi, also later named Radagast, and Morthar," took Romastamo Palando as a friend. "They were forbidden to dominate the free peoples of Middle-earth or to match Sauron's power with power, as if they devastated from their appointed task, their powers and memory of Valinor would begin to wane." The wizards were known by various names and were arrayed in different colors. Of those who came to Middle-earth, sent by the Valar, five are known: Harwin Astarion, Order of Wizards. After arriving in Middle-earth, two blue wizards apparently went east for the War of the Ring. Whether they played a part in the events of the war is unknown. Note, according to Tolkien letters, there may have formed cults for magic worships and practiced among the Easterlings. Radagast the Brown concerned himself mainly with plants and animals, living in Mirkwood for many years. Saruman the White and Gandalf the Grey spent their time with the free peoples, the elves, dwarfs, and men. Saruman was wise and respected. Okay, whatever. Later became the head of the White Council in TA 2463. However, he became prideful and jealous of the power and purity of Gandalf's spirit and reputation. Saruman slowly came to betray the original purpose of the wizards and sought power for himself. At the end of the Third Age, the wizards passed from sight because with the fall of Sauron, their work was done. Gandalf passed over to sea with the last riding of the Keepers of the Rings. Radagast remained in Middle-earth, tending to the wilderness. During the War of the Ring, Saruman was overthrown, banished from the Starry Order by Gandalf, killed by a servant after a failed attempt to rule the Shire, and even his Maiar spirit was barred from ever returning to Aman due to the betrayal of Manwë and the real purpose of the wizards. The fate of the blue wizards is unknown. The wizards resemble elderly men, although they age very slowly. Despite their age appearance, they possess physically strong bodies and highly intelligent minds. Each of the Starry carried a staff and is associated with a color and possess a rank within their order. A Starry was a Kenyan award, a star. The Sindarin translation was Ithrin. Okay. There was Saruman the White, also known as Kuruman, Kurin, Chakor, and Sharki, Amaya of Alu, original leader of the Starry Order and the White Council. After his corruption by Sauron, he remains himself Saruman the Many-Colored, cast out from both the White Council and the Starry by a resurrected Gandalf, ultimately killed by Grima Wormtongue following the battles of Bywater. Gandalf the Grey, also known as Olorin, Mithildur, Thorkin, and Inkanus, Amaya of Maui, and Barda. After he was killed by a Balrog, he was born as Gandalf the White, the new leader of the White Council, and the Astari, wielder of the sword, Glombard Ring, and Narya, the Ring of Fire. Successfully in his mission to defeat Sauron, he returned to Valinor at the end of the Third Age. Radagast the Brown, also known as Alwedain, Amaya of Yavanna, a lover of nature who mostly participated who mostly avoided participating in the War of the Ring. The Blue Wizards, also known as the Aetheruin, both Maia of Orming, traveled to distant east of Middle Earth. Little is known about them, and their fates are unknown. Sumerian. Sorry, a phone call coming. Anyway, turn now. So that's pretty much like the whole like wizards and stuff, like gods and so. Wizards are basically like angels, I guess, or like. So Gandalf is pretty much like an angel. If you think of it that way. But let's continue on with some more. Of these. So we got. After this message, tell you real quick about, I don't know, something you can help, or you can help support the show. Alright, simple thing you gotta do is if you want some cool clothes, let's go over to bruteimpact.com, right? And you're going to use code word 25_Tanner and say 25% off your order when you order at bruteimpact.com. Use code word 25_Tanner and say 25% off your order. That's it. Thank you. Alright, we're back. Hello. Okay, let's talk about dwarves. Dwarves were a race of Middle Earth, also known as the Khazad, and their own, or Khazari. Naugrim, meaning stunted people, and Gaugrim, and the masters of stone. The dwarves were made by Auli, whom they themselves called Mahala, meaning maker. Auli was unwilling to wait for the coming of the children of Ilúvatar, for he was impatient and desired to have someone to teach his lore and crafts. Therefore, he made the first seven fathers of the dwarves in secret and hall under the mountains of Middle-earth. It was, however, not with Auli's power to create life. After being reprimanded by Ilúvatar and realizing his error, Auli offered his creations to his father to do with as he would. Including their destruction. Even as the author was made, Ilúvatar accepted and gave dwarves a life of their own. So Auli picked up a great hammer to smite the seven fathers and destroy his presumptuous creations. They shrank back in fear and begged for mercy. Ilúvatar was, however, not willing to suffer the dwarves should come before the firstborn, and he decreed that the seven fathers should sleep underground. Shall not come forth until a firstborn have awakened. After a century after the elves awakened, the seven fathers of dwarves were aroused. Of those seven, only the name of one is known, Durin the First, who was called the Deathless. Each one of his seven fathers became a king of his own clan, and each built his own great hall. Three major holds are known to have been built in this period. Belgos and Nongron were built in the Blue Mountains, and the dwarves of these holds formed alliances with the Noldor and fought in the wars. Durin the First, on the other hand, wandered into a vale in the Misty Mountains. He named Azalilbar in a steel pool in the vale. He saw a reflection of himself, the crown of seven stars. Ever after, constellation of stars that the elves called Valaskirka was called by the dwarves Durin's crown, and was seen reflected in the water at any time of day. Though only Durin could see his own reflection, Durin first named the lake Kel'Zarim and proceeded to build his great hall, Khazad Dûm, in the mountains above. In the First Age, the dwarves made alliances with the elves, and both prospered from trade. Dwarves from Beulah invented the famous dwarf mail of lengthy reins and fashioned the finest steel the world has ever seen. They also constructed the halls of Thingol, Mangroth, and were rewarded by the pearl Niflheims. They fought alongside elves and men and participated in some of the major battles of the First Age, including the First Battle of Beleriand and then the nearest Arwendiad, in which the dwarves of Belgos won great renown for being the only ones able to stand against the dragon Clawron, for which is their custom moreover to wear great masks and battle hideouts to look upon, which set them good steed against dragons. And besides, they were naturally able to resist fire better than elves or men in that battle. Azaghal, the lord of the Belgos, was killed by Garun, who crawled over him. Before dying, Dwarf stabbed at the dragon's belly with his knife and pricked him so deep that he fled back to Angband? Whatever. Oh, sorry, I'm like butchering. So, Dwarves of Norgrim were famous for the craftsmen of their weapons. Most notably against their smiths was Talkar. Dwarves from Nogron, crafted necklaces of Nalaglamir and Thingol, crested dwarf smiths from Nograd to set a Cimmerillion into the necklace, and thus order to unite the greatest works of elves and dwarves. Those dwarf smiths were driven mad by gold dust, however, and murdered Thingol and stole the necklace and the stone, denying the better rivalry between dwarves and elves that raged between the two races until the end of the Third Age. The elves of Doriath pursued the smiths to their death and reclaimed Nalaglamir, but two of the slayers of Thingol escaped from the pursuit, and in Nograd told how dwarves were slain by command of the elven king, who thus would cheat them of their just reward. The dwarves of Nograd lamented the death of their kin and their great craftsmen, and took thought of vengeance. Though dwarves of Belgos tried to dissuade them from their purpose, the dwarves of Nograd invaded Doriath, and after a hard battle in the Thousand Caves, the dwarves of Nograd were victorious and took Nalaglamir and the Silmarillion. On their return journey to the Blue Mountains, however, the dwarves of Nograd were assailed by a company that included Beren, his son Dior, and many green elves of Osirin. Many of the dwarves were slain, and Beren himself slew the lord of Nograd and wrestled from him Nicholas Nalaglamir. Some of the dwarves escaped from the battle, but they were ambushed in the slopes beneath Mount Dome by the Shepherds of the Trees. Some stories from the First Age tell of petty dwarves who were called Nogith Nibin, though those were elves exiled from their homes during the Peace of Arda, and were the first dwarves to enter Beleriand. It was petty dwarves who first inhabited and carved out the caverns of Narrog, which they called Nulikidin, but were later taken over by Finrod and called Nograthrond. The last of this line was Remim and his two sons, who lived at Amarud. Mim Aiden Turin and his adventures but seriously betrayed them to orcs. Oh, fuck that. The fuck? So, let's see, many dwarves, and it's like, hey, dude, you can't make this dwarf right now, dude. You gotta chill first elves first indoors. It's like, okay, put them to sleep under the ground. And it's like, okay. And then they went and had a party, and they all had different things going on. And some people got a little after our First Age. Most tales telling of dwarves are about the dwarves of the line of Durin, who are commonly known as called Durin's folk, or Longbeards. Durin the First enjoyed a very long life and lived through most of the First Age. Every now and then, though, the following ages, a dwarf was born of this line that was so alike to Durin that he was cured to be Durin reborn. Prophecy told that Durin would be reborn 7 times, and the coming of Durin the 7th would mark the decline of the dwarves. Durin the 2nd was born in the 2nd age. It's not known exactly when, but he was in power when the smith Narvi built the west gate of Khazad Dûm in the year 750. His reign was an era of great prosperity, in which the halls of Khazad Dûm was greatly expanded, and Noldor, elves of Lindon, moved into a region to trade with the dwarves for Mithril. Population boomed because many refugees from Belgos and Nograd were destroyed at the end of the First Age, moved to Khazad Dûm. Durin the Third was in power around the year 1600 of the Second Age. He was gifted with the 7th and most powerful of the Dwarven Rings of Power. It was the elven smith Celebrimbor, and not Saruman, gave him the ring. The Rings of Power did not have effects that Saruman had intended, possibly because all of them had made the dwarves especially resistant to evil domination. The only apparent effect of dwarves' rings was that the dwarves became more greedy with gold lust, but they were not turned to race like a man. Sauron tried to recover the rings. Two he reclaimed fairly soon, and four ended up in dragon hordes. Sauron did not reclaim the ring of Durin until 2450th year of the Third Age, when he captured Trin the Ring the 2nd. Of dwarves, few fought upon either side, but the kindred of Durin of Moria fought against Sauron. In the year in the Third Age, 1980, after centuries of greedy digging for mithril and other minerals, a dwarf woke a Balrog that was sleeping in the deeps of the Misty Mountains since the First Age. The dwarfs fled Khazad Dûm, which the men then on was called Moria, which means Black Pit. Most of Durin's folk left for the Grey Mountains in the north, while some were followed the new king, Thrain the First. He briefly went to Erebor. For more than 300 years, the dwarfs of the Grey Mountains prospered until dragons in the far north started to gain strength. Some fled to the Iron Hills, which was most followed the new king, Thor, to Erebor to start a new kingdom under the mountain. There, they prospered for over 200 years until the dragon Smaug ascended in TA-2770. The king and his company went in exile south, while most of the survivors went to the Iron Hills. Durin's folk settled in Dunland, and King Thor traveled north to Moria, where he was killed by the Golem King, Azog. Thor's son, Thrain the Second, who received the last of 7 rings from his father for his departure, summoned all the houses of the dwarves to war. Thus began the War of Dwarves and Orc, in which the dwarves destroyed all the goblin strongholds in the Misty Mountains, called Maine to the Great Battle of Azul-Nilbazar, where all dwarven clans united. The goblin hosts issuing from Moria were strong and relentless until the arrival of fresh dwarves of the Iron Hills. The battle ended with the victory of dwarves by the Great Cross. Dwarven clans, however, were unwilling to repopulate Moria. Thrain therefore came to the Blue Mountain and established his realm there. So that's basically The Hobbit you're talking about. The wizard Gandalf was instrumental into helping Thrain's son, Thorin, in reclaiming the kingdom of Erebor. Thorin gathered around him 12 dwarves, mostly from his own line, and were joined by Gandalf and Bilbo Baggins. The quest of Erebor ended with the death of Smaug. After a quarrel with the men and elves over the unguarded Hoar, the dwarves, assisted by those from the Iron Hills, united with the men and elves to fight the attacking goblins and wargs. It was called the Battle of the Five Armies, where Thorin was killed. Gimli, son of Glúin, joined the Fellowship as a representative of the dwarves and befriended Legolas during the War of the Ring. At the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, a force of Longbeards and men of Dale held the Lonely Mountain in a single siege against an army of Easterlings who had taken all of Brad's land, leaving only the capital city of Dale. The dwarves and men of Dale stood for 3 days against the Easterlings, and once the news of Sauron's death spread to the Lonely Mountain, the Easterlings retreated. During the Fourth Age, which began after the destruction of Mordor and Sauron, dwarves and men reforged their friendship. Dain was killed during the War of the Rings and was succeeded by his son Thorin III Stonehelm, who ruled over into the Fourth Age. During this time, dwarves from the Lonely Mountain helped rebuild cities in Gondor and the fortress of the Hornburg, and in some sense in the newly established dwarven realm of the Glittering Caves, where Gimli was lord. Right on, Gimli. Dude, Gimli's the best.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Kingdom of the Lonely Mountain apparently continued to prosper throughout the Fourth Age. Subsequently, Gimli went on many undocumented travels with his friend Legolas. It is rumored that in FO 120, Gimli and Legolas boarded a ship that sailed down the River Anduin, and they sailed to Valinor. Gimli was thus the only dwarf to ever permit it to cross to the Undying Lands. Durin the Seventh retook Moria and brought Khazad Dûm back to its original splendor, and the Longbeards lived there till the world grew old and the days of Durin's race ended. When Alia created the dwarves, he had only a vague idea of what the children of Ilúvatar should look like because of the threat of Morgoth's overworld. Elul made them very strong, both in body and character. Dwarves were a short, stocky race, a little taller than hobbits, but much broader and heavier. Most dwarves had thick, luxuriant beards in which they took great pride, and often forked or braided them and tucked them into their belts. They have seem to have favored simple, durable clothing, colored hoods and heavy cloaks for traveling, and belts of gold or silver. For battle, their soldiers would have elaborately crafted armor and helmets, marrying various angles and styles that were trademarks of dwarven crafting styles. Their armor was masked with symbols after a manner of those used in forges for shielding the eyes. They were hideous to look upon. Dwarven women were alike in manner, voice, and appearance to the menfolk. They were few in number, less than a third of all dwarf kind, and they were seldom seen outside their own halls, often not venturing far due to their duties as caretakers and crafters in dwarven society. They typically only traveled when in great need, and they usually dressed similarly to dwarf men. They often led other folk to believe that there were no women among the dwarves, that dwarves grew from stone when created. few female dwarven warriors were known, but some tales say that female dwarves were as fierce as their male counterparts, especially in protecting their families and offspring. I believe that with 100%. Dwarves were usually monogamous, and fewer than one-third dwarven men took a wife, rest by themselves, busying themselves with their crafts. Dwarves were a proud and stern race, and were made to be sturdy to resist the dangers of their time. They were physically very strong, had great endurance, especially the ability to resist heat and cold, and they made light of heavy burdens. Dwarves lived longer than men, often up to 250 years. Dwarves had the ability to learn new artisanal skills quickly, especially those dealing with metal or stone. Dwarves were typically stubborn, secretive, and are fiercely loyal to friends and family. They treat and care for each other, even strangers among their kind like family. They care greatly about mining, crafting, crafts, gold, and gems, the acquisition of which often fueled their envy of the elves. Dwarves were easily offended by rude comments and had a propensity to hold long-lasting grudges. Dwarves were often seen as greedy, but their nature gave them resistance to many external influences, including the evil of the Ring of Power given them. Whereas the men who owned the Nine Rings were corrupted and became the Nazgul. The dwarves were unaffected, save by an increase of their gold lust and hatred for anything that stood between them and when they received and what they perceived as treasure. It's awesome. Where is that? Dwarves were taught special skills by Davala Ali and spent most of their time crafting, smithing, and mining in their massive underground cities. Dwarves were some of the greatest miners ever to exist in Middle-earth. Dwarves dug immense halls under mountains, which they built their cities. Dwarven miners dug for precious minerals such as gold, iron, copper, and silver from all over mountains in Middle-earth. Though the dwarves considered coal mining degrading, in ancient times, dwarves found mithril in the mines of Khazad Dûm. While mining beneath the Lonely Mountains, they discovered the Arkenstone at the heart of the mountain. They're also capable masons and smiths. Dwarven smithing skills were said to be rivaled only by those of the elves, and their masonry creations were bested by none. The skills of the dwarves were unmatched. They crafted objects of such great beauty, diamond, emerald, ruby, and sapphire. Everything dwarven was beautifully crafted and intricate. They crafted many famed weapons, armors, and items of art and beauty, among them Narasil, the sword of Eladrin, the dragon helm of Dorne Loman, and the necklace of Nalglamir. Dwarven armies were vast and powerful, and possessed vast legions of soldiers, cavalry, and siege weapons, and their soldiers were equipped with powerful weapons, armors, and tools for battle. Many different weapons were utilized by the soldiers, such as swords, axes, throwing knives, and war hammers. They had a knack for starting a fire almost anywhere out of almost anything. Although they knew how, dwarves did not farm or herd often, as they preferred to spend their time underground mining and crafting. They rather traded crafting items with men and elves in exchange for food. They built many famed halls, including the Lonely Mountain, Belgost, Nalgrand, Khazad Dûm, the halls of Thranduil, and Mengroth. The dwarves also refored the gates of Minas Tirith and rebuilt the walls of Helm's Deep after the War of the Ring. Their cities appeared to be constructed just under mountains or mountain ranges. Dwarven miners would excavate the mountains to create an entrance, dig through and under the mountain to create the groundwork for the cities. Dwarven cities were absolutely massive and very expansive, reaching the far depths of the earth. Dwarves continued to mine in their cities to expand them and discover more resources like precious metals and minerals. Dwarven cities throughout the mountains ranges stretched up, down, and side to side in the massive caverns beneath the surface. but it was largely unknown how cities were structured and sectioned off. In Casa Doom, there was a section of the city known as the Chamber of Mazabu, also known as the Chamber of Records. There were also sections of the city mentioned in the Book of Mazabu, such as the First Hall, Second Hall, Third Deep, 21st Hall, and the North End. The beauty of the dwarf cities was legend. One stronghold, Erebor, located in the Lonely Mountains, had its wealth coming from precious gems hewn from rock and great seams of gold running like rivers through stone. A name for where the dwarves were located was Ferenargian, which means dwarf dwelling in the common tongue. So, elves. The elves who call themselves the Kindin and who in lore are commonly called as the Eldar were the first and eldest of the children of the Ilúvatar and are considered to be the fairest and wisest of any race of Arda given the sapience. Some known afterwards as the Kalokindin, were brought by the Valar from Middle-earth to Valinor across the sea, where they were taught by the Anyar. But after the Silmarils were stolen by Melkor, some of the elves returned to Middle-earth, where they remained until the end of the Third Age. Elves were not subject to age and were immune to illness. They could be killed only in violence or by extreme despair. The firstborn of the Eldor, children of Eldor, were conceived by Eru alone, and the third theme of Ainulidae. They are the eldest and noblest of the speaking races of Middle-earth. They awoke at Kolovrian, the water of awakening, in the far east of Middle-earth, in the starlight of the sleep of Yavanna. As the sun and moon had yet to be created, the first elves to awake there were three pairs, Eamon first and his wife, Imataita and Tati, and Enel third and Enyo. According to legend, Eamon, Tata, Enel, and their wives joined up and walked through the forest. They came across 9 and 12 pairs of elves, and each patriarch claimed the pairs as his folk. The now 60 elves dwell by the rivers, and they invented poetry and music in Middle-earth. Journeying further, they came across a band of elves watching the stars, which he had claimed as his. These were tall and dark-haired, the father of most of the Noldor. The 96 elves now invented many new words. Continuing the journey, they found 24 pairs of elves, singing without language, and Anil added them to his people. They were the ancestors of both the Lindar or seniors called Teleri. They found no more elves. Inman's people, the smallest group, were the ancestors of the Vanyar. All in all, they numbered 144. Because all elves had been found in groups of 12, 12 becomes the base number, and 144 their highest number for a long time. None of the later elves' language had a common name for a greater number. At first, the elves sang with grace and merriment without speech, but soon they developed speech and spoke with words. Soon, the first name for themselves was Kindin, the ones who speak with voices. So the elves were content and dwelt along under the stars of the forest near Cuvianen. However, Melkor, the Dark Lord, became aware of them and their location for the Valor. During this time, he sent evil spirits to spy on them and do them harm. Many of the spirits that harassed the elves came in the form of great horsemen for the purpose of causing the elves to fear the Vala Orumin, whom Melkor knew would likely be the first Vala to discover the elves. And so it was that on one of his many journeys in the wilds of Middle Earth, Orimin came upon elves. Due to Melkor's foresight and malice, some elves were afraid, hiding and fleeing. Some of these early elves were taken by Melkor or his agents. These elves were never seen again and were taken to Utumnon and were believed to be twisted and mutilated into the first orcs. However, the elves who stayed quickly learned that Orimin was far different from the evils that had been pursuing them. Orimin quickly came to love the elves and them and gave them the name Aldor, which means people of the stars. Orimin spent some time with them and returned to Valinor to Maui of his discovery. He then returned to live with elves for a time and learn more about them. Not long after that, Valor decided for good of the elves that Melkor needed to be overthrown. The Valor war upon Melkor and set a guard on Cunovin. The elves knew nothing of the war, save the earth shook and thunderous lightning was seen in the north. Okay. So to make sure, alright. I'm going to stop here. If you want part two, let me know. I just want to make sure I have enough time since it's not too long so I can actually upload this to my thing so you guys can actually hear this and not only the quality won't be so shitty and everything. But if you know what you think, you want some more, continue on with these elves for part two. Let me know. And continue on with the creatures of Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings and stuff.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.